Today, we answer your Omicron questions. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Florida's COVID cases have risen by more than 900% since the holidays. Is it inevitable that we're all going to get it eventually? Today, we're going to talk with an epidemiologist about what you should know about Omicron at this point. Also, we're going to look at COVID testing with WLRN healthcare reporter Veronica Zaragovia and where you can get a test around South Florida. And finally, a look ahead at 2022 and the world of books. We're talking with Mitchell Kaplan of Books and Books about what everybody's reading these days. All of that today on Sundial after the news. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure you've been hearing a lot about the Omicron variant of the coronavirus lately, but that's because the highly contagious variant is spreading through the Sunshine State fast, especially since the holidays. It feels like so many more people are testing positive than before, and it can be hard to keep up with useful information about the virus and the facts as day-to-day numbers just change so rapidly. Jason Salami is a professor of epidemiology at the University of South Florida College of Public Health in Tampa, and he joins us now to help answer some of these Omicron questions. Mr. Salami, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Luis.
And by the way, if you have a question for our professor today, you can tweet us. Find us at WLRN Sundial on Facebook. Also at WLRN Sundial, post your questions there. Professor, where are we right now regarding daily cases? It seems the numbers are climbing very fast.
Very fast. I have not seen the CDC release of data today, but over the past 7 days for which we have information, we've had over 360,000 cases. That's over 51,000 cases per day. And just for some context, during the height of our Delta surge, we had just under 22,000 cases per day. So right now, we're experiencing 30,000 more cases every single day than we had at the peak of our Delta surge. You know, right now we're 6 times higher than we were 2 weeks ago and 24 times higher than we were just 4 weeks ago. Nationally, we're only behind New York City, the District of Columbia, and New Jersey in terms of our recent infection rate.
So with these kind of numbers, I mean, are we also seeing more hospitalizations?
We absolutely are, because when you have community surge to this extent, every variant of this virus has been very good at finding vulnerable people in our communities. And so I just pulled some numbers that were released just about an hour and a half ago from the federal government. So let's first focus on adults currently hospitalized with confirmed COVID-19 in the state. Just 2 weeks ago, that number was just below 1,500 adults. Right now, it's 6,618. So that's a 343% increase in just the past 2 weeks. But for perspective, we're still about 2.5 times lower than we were at the peak of our Delta surge, where there was an astonishingly high 17,000 adults that were currently hospitalized. But we're also seeing the most severe patients, those that end up in an intensive care unit, those have also been on the rise. Again, just 2 weeks ago, there were 301 adults currently in an ICU bed. Right now, that number is 810, a 169% increase. And again, for context, we're still 5 times lower than we were at the peak of our Delta surge when we had over 3,700 adults in an ICU bed.
And what about with children in hospitals?
Yeah, children, it's a similar story. So with kids, in fact, you may have heard in the entire United States right now, we're seeing more hospitalizations in the pediatric population than we have at any other time during the pandemic. That's not necessarily true yet in Florida. 2 weeks ago, we had 49 children hospitalized in the entire state with confirmed COVID-19. Right now, that number has increased to 169 children. It's a 245% increase. And it's only 1.4 times lower than our peak ever during the Delta surge, when there was 229 children currently hospitalized. So again, we've seen the cases rise in an astonishing rate, although hospitalizations are not increasing as much as they maybe would have during Delta because of just the massive number of people being infected. We are seeing a lot more people visiting our hospitals.
So what am I supposed to make of that information, that we see the numbers rising, but hospitalizations not as much? What does that tell me about Omicron?
Well, first of all, I mean, I think in order to put it into perspective, let's think about the recent Delta surge. Unfortunately, that's not that far back in our rearview mirror where it's hard to remember. You know, during Delta, right before that surge happened, we were much less immunologically naive prior to that surge. So what I mean by that is fewer people were vaccinated. Seniors were vaccinated early and they were starting to experience some waning immunity. Fewer people had protection from a prior infection. And so we were much more susceptible. And then you saw this increase in hospitalizations that was strongly correlated with the increase in cases. And so we ended up with less than 22,000 cases per day at the peak, but it led to over 17,000 hospitalized patients. It led to, you know, 400 people dying per day in Florida at our peak during the Delta surge. But now with the Omicron surge, it seems that, first of all, the variant just has much less intrinsic severity, biologically speaking. It seems as though it's less likely to infiltrate as intensely the lower part of your respiratory tract, where your lungs are and where it tends to do the most damage. It's much better at infiltrating your nose, which is why it's so much more likely to be spread. But because it doesn't get as deep into your respiratory system relative to something like Delta, it just seems to be causing less severe illness. And some of the most recent data out of the UK corroborates that. It said that people were half as likely to be hospitalized with Omicron than they were with Delta. So, and we also know that coming into this surge, we've got a much improved ability to fight against severe illness with Omicron, because a lot more people have been vaccinated and or boosted, and people have built up immunity from prior infections, mainly during that Delta surge. And so when you get all of this together, that's why we're finding this decoupling of cases and hospitalizations, that the dramatic rise in cases is no longer predictive of the same sort of rise in hospitalization. So it's still very serious. It's still hospitalizing a lot of people because it's so transmissible and it's still finding vulnerable people. But for an individual, on average, it's less likely to cause severe illness.
What about the folks who are getting hospitalized for something else, but then they find out they have COVID? How is that playing into the numbers?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, what we found throughout this entire pandemic is that the data are quite dirty and they don't often give us the information that we'd like to have. So, for example, when we analyze hospitalization data reported by hospitals across the country and then released daily by the federal government, we've always known that not every hospitalization for which a person tested positive for COVID was actually a hospitalization due to COVID. Many people may have been hospitalized for something other than COVID. And, you know, it's just when community spread gets as pronounced as it is during Omicron, a lot of hospitalized people end up testing positive and they count as a confirmed COVID-19 hospitalization. But these national data don't allow us to distinguish between people hospitalized because of COVID-19 and those who just happen to test positive while they were admitted for something else. So we've been wondering, you know, is it 20% of hospitalizations, 80%? And unfortunately, we don't get that at the national level, but in Florida, Jackson Health System Hospitals has been tweeting out every day some very useful information that will place all of this into context. So as of this morning, Jackson Health System Hospital said that they currently have 471 patients who've tested positive for COVID-19 and who are hospitalized. Of those, 53% were admitted for something that was primarily a non-COVID reason. And they also continue to break it down that most of these patients who are admitted are not vaccinated. And even among those who are vaccinated, a lot of them are immunocompromised transplant patients. So this is the kind of granular information. And the one thing that I really want to state is, because this is important, this discussion of the dirtiness of the data, this is not to trivialize the increasing burden on our healthcare system. You know, a COVID-19 infection never helped any situation caring for a hospitalized patient. And, you know, in addition to potentially exacerbating their primary illness, it increases the risk of infection for our healthcare professionals, other hospital staff, and other hospitalized patients. But it's just that these details about the hospitalizations just muddy the water as we try and understand Omicron's impact as it pertains to more severe outcomes. That's
a very interesting point as well. Again, talking with Professor Jason Salami, professor of epidemiology at the University of South Florida College of Public Health in Tampa, talking about Omicron, what it means for our daily lives, just talking about what we understand about Omicron and what the latest numbers are. As we've heard, the numbers are rising fast. The number of people getting it going up very quickly compared to the Delta variant, but trying to understand too what Omicron is and what it is doing to people. You know what, Professor, could this be the last surge? Or what are we expecting over the next month? I mean, we just had the holidays. What are we expecting over January and February?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, we've kind of learned that until we do a good job of vaccinating a large majority of people, not just in Florida, not just in the United States, but around the world, we increase the likelihood that variants with the characteristics like Omicron that are more transmissible, that are better at evading certain aspects of our immune system, or that even in a worst case scenario are more virulent, more likely to cause severe illness, that possibility is always there. But I'll start by being optimistic about the future. First and foremost, you're probably hearing a lot that we should peak relatively soon. When we look at the UK, when we look at South Africa, it's a very dramatic rise in cases, a very quick peak, and then hopefully a very rapid return down to much lower levels. And the CDC just updated some of their modeling prediction. They say by the end of this month, I've even heard some models predict as soon as next week, we're gonna hit our peak and start to come back down. That's a good thing to be optimistic about.
When should people...
The thing that we've discussed about, we got lucky with this variant in many ways, that it seems to be a little bit more mild, less likely to cause severe illness. And again, that's primarily because of characteristics of the variant, you know, not infiltrating the lower respiratory tract, but also because we have much higher levels of population immunity.
And
people who have been vaccinated and boosted and prior infection.
If I may, because you talk about, you know, what we could expect in the next month, but part of that comes to testing. And I'm wondering when people should be getting tested. Should we just be getting tested whenever we feel that it's a good idea, or just at the onset of symptoms?
Yeah, I would say, you know, more often than not during the holidays, when you had people that were making decisions to get together with family, either by traveling to other places, or even if it's within the same community, you might be getting together with people that you don't often hang out with and who might be in vulnerable groups. And so we said, even if you weren't symptomatic, it's a good idea to get tested prior to doing those things, because if you are positive and maybe asymptomatic, you still might have a high likelihood of passing it to other people when you're traveling, or passing it to your loved ones that you're getting together with who may be infected. I think certainly as we think about kids going back to schools and teachers going back to schools, more and more people going back to work, you know, I think certainly don't go into those settings if you are symptomatic.
Right.
That's a really good time to go and get tested. I know it's a big challenge right now to find these at-home tests or to find testing sites, but that's when we want to take extra precautions, because if we have symptoms, we don't want to assume it's the cold or possibly the flu. We want to make sure and test negative before we go back into these settings. Again, just because the likelihood of then passing it along to your coworkers or to, you know, children in the school setting or teachers and staff, that's just much higher likelihood if we're not being responsible with monitoring our symptoms and
we're
taking appropriate action.
We're going to be talking about testing here in the next segment, just briefly in 30 seconds. I've seen this before, this idea that, you know, everyone's going to get it eventually. Let's just get over it. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I think that nothing is inevitable in this pandemic. Look, first, even if Omicron is half as likely to land a person in the hospital compared to Delta, if we see 2, 3, 4 times as many cases in a really short period of time, that could mean many, many people needing care in a hospital all at once. It would make emergency rooms and hospitals more dangerous places to be and harder to provide quality care for every patient. Second, the spread, if we just let everybody get it, is going to continue to cause disruptions in the workplace, in schools, and businesses. And even with CDC's abbreviated timeframe for isolation for people who remain asymptomatic, it's still going to cause disruptions. And finally, like other variants, Omicron will continue to find the most vulnerable people in our communities if we let it spread like wildfire, whether it's people who aren't vaccinated or have no prior infection, people who are immunocompromised or just at high risk of poor COVID outcomes. And maybe their job doesn't allow them to do what I can do. I can work from home most days. Maybe those people are still put in harm's way every day. So it, a lot of reasons to try and curb spread to the extent possible.
Yeah, it's not over. And it's going to be a challenge for a while. But all great information, as always. Professor Jason Salami of Epidemiology at the University of South Florida College of Public Health in Tampa. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much, sir.
Thanks so much, Lewis.
Well, still to come, a lot of people want to get tested in South Florida. Where should they go? We'll try to find that answer for you coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Lewis Hernandez. 2021 with COVID was another busy year to try to keep ourselves healthy and keep up with all of the different healthcare news across South Florida. Hospital policies, where to go for testing, don't neglect your annual visits. I mean, the list goes on. Well, joining us now to talk about some health stories on the horizon in 2022, and again, talking about where you can get a COVID test these days, is WLRN healthcare reporter Veronica Zaragovia. Veronica, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Happy to be here. Thanks, Lewis.
Well, happy New Year's. Listen, I got to start with this. I mean, you have been vaccinated. You got COVID, though.
I did. We'll start straight there. And that's why that booster shot was so important. I got it at the end of November. And I would say that because of that, I'm now double negative. But in my experience, I had like that ticklish throat and it evolved into a minor cold. But it was, in fact, COVID-19. So I am assuming I caught the variant of the coronavirus, the Omicron, because it was very, mild symptoms. But yeah, that's, I really do think, because of the my vaccinations.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you found out, I want to know what it was like for you. And because I saw you the day, I think after you told me afterwards, I saw you the day before.
Yeah, where I didn't have symptoms, which is what's really difficult with this one, where I felt initially a ticklish throat. And so I had gone and stood for 2 hours in a Miami-Dade County testing site. And I tested negative with both the PCR test that goes to a laboratory and the rapid antigen test that's done on site usually, and both came back negative. And so I saw you briefly that day. And then the next day I started developing a cold and I thought, I guess I caught a cold. And then I thought, well, those could be the symptoms of COVID-19 now. So I went to get tested again and then it was positive. And so then of course I isolated for about 10 days. Now that I'm negative, I'm just still isolating because it's just so, I use an N95 mask and I am really very careful. I don't eat indoors without a mask. I don't know where I caught it. I think this one is just so contagious that I'm very fortunate that I can work from home a lot. And I think that right now that's the best option to keep the community safe, is to try to limit unnecessary exposures.
And by the way, you talk about the masks and they recommend certain masks better than others, right?
Yes. At this point, cloth masks are really not recommended. And the surgical masks that we've been using are also not as recommended as the KN95 or the N95 masks. They're quite expensive and very uncomfortable. Comfortable, but they're just like the best ones you could get would be those. And I would say I had been near my mom and wearing that mask, and I didn't, fortunately, I didn't pass on, you know, I didn't get her infected. So I just, from personal experience, those are really good masks to go with.
Well, you know, after you told me that you had it, obviously, you know, I went looking for a testing site, and I took for granted. I thought it was going to be like, you know, before in 2020 and early 2021. And it's limited. It's more limited. Plus, when I went to some of the sites, oh my goodness, the lines, which, by the way, was scary in of itself, because I saw hundreds of people literally wrapped around blocks standing next to each other. They were all masked. Most of them were masked. But still, what is it with testing sites now? You know, where are they?
Because this variant does spread so easily that a lot of sites do have long lines. But I do want to tell you and listeners that where you don't go to get tested is to an emergency department at a hospital. That's just not a place to get tested to avoid these long lines. But I know of places where the wait time seems to be quite low. That would be Port Miami, Holover Park. They've opened up a lot of sites across the counties. For instance, Miami-Dade County just opened up a site at I-75 and Northwest 186th Street in Hialeah. Broward County opened up. They have a bunch of park sites that are run by the Department of Health in Broward County. So there's now Mullins Park in Coral Springs. Palm Beach County has a drive-through in Boynton Beach. And you can find all of these at WLRN.org. We're updating them all the time. But I'll give a pro tip to try, if you can go in the evening times, that's when these lines disappear. Like if you go to the Miami Beach site on 17th Street at the garage there, at about, it closes at 9. If you go to at 8, you will go in and out in less than 5 minutes. It's evening times are good. Or you can line up at 7 before a site opens at 8, and your wait time will be an hour. But if you wait till 8 when these sites open up, then you might be standing or in your car for 2 hours. So wake up early if you can, too.
That's what I found not too long ago. I thought I showed up early. I was like, I'm early. Nope. Nope. That line was wrapped around the block. Again, talking with WLRN's healthcare reporter, Veronica Zaragovia, looking at testing sites, talking about some of the big stories that we're already checking up on for 2022. Yeah, Veronica, I mean, so much going on. It doesn't slow down in this new year.
Right.
I mean, look, you got masks in school, still a story. Booster shots approved for children soon. I mean, there's a lot going on, and we're just starting.
Yeah, 2022 is not slowing down from the end of last year. That's for sure. You know, the school districts are for the most part requiring adults and visitors to wear masks indoors. They're not requiring children because their hands are tied by new legislation that was put into effect by the legislature. Governor DeSantis signed this into law, where you can't require children to wear masks in schools. But most adults have to. In Monroe County, they're encouraged for students and staff, but not required at this time. That's the one difference.
And I do want to mention, too, that booster shots are now approved for 12 to 15-year-olds.
That's right. And also, the FDA has also narrowed the interval for booster shot eligibility from 6 months to 5 months. So that's also being recommended, that you not wait 6 months to get the booster shot. And the agency also authorized a third shot for children 5 to 11 years old who are immunocompromised. So it's good to check with your child's pediatrician and see what's the next step.
And of course, we have the legislature. The legislative session is starting early this year because it's an election year, so it's going to be starting, you know, this month. What healthcare-related bills are you looking at? What are you going to be watching during this session?
Well, certainly we'll be watching what ends up happening with an abortion bill that was written to very much follow the Texas abortion bill that would make abortion illegal after 6 weeks, and that also enables private citizens to sue anybody that is considered to have helped somebody get an abortion. And so that's been filed. However, Florida's legislature hasn't been able to pass in recent years stricter restrictions on abortion as in other states like Texas. So it's unclear, you know, how far that bill is going to go. I'm also actually collaborating with stations in Florida healthcare reporters who were looking at legislation that changes the requirements in nursing homes and might enable people who have perhaps less training than certified nursing assistant or CNAs to do the work that they do. And it's controversial in a way to help nursing home companies cut costs, but it also might be problematic for people who live there and for staff. So we'll be following that. So stay tuned for that. And certainly anything that has to do with healthcare, and if there's, you know, any discussions on Medicaid eligibility, would be looking at that closely too.
Yeah. And of course, one of the other things you covered heavily was the Surfside tragedy last year. Where's that story going this year?
Right. So right now, that story is unfolding mostly actually in a courthouse, Miami-Dade County Courthouse in the city of Miami. So it's kind of, the focus is a little less in the actual town of Surfside and more what's happening there because of the litigation that's going on. And so, for instance, in February, there's expected to be an auction that's been approved by the judge. If other bidders decide to compete against the Dubai-based developer that's set the base price for $120 million for that property and develop a building there. There's also a lot of fighting going on among people who survived and lost their units versus people who are family members of those who died, and they're just not agreeing on how the money should be allocated, like the insurance money, the property sale money, what ends up coming out of the litigation. So it's changed a lot. It used to be a lot back when it happened. It was a lot of, you know, spending time in Surfside and going to the memorial and telling those stories of people very much in pain. And now it's a lot more about the court fighting.
Like I said, 2022 already off to a very hot start, and we're not going to get much rest. It's going to be a lot of work. Again, WLRN's healthcare reporter, Veronica Zaragovia. Follow her reporting at WLRN.org. Veronica, I'm so glad that you're doing well and you're healthy. Stay healthy, please.
Thank you so much. And you too, Lewis. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, still to come, we're going to switch things up. Let's get away from health for now, and let's talk about something that we can look forward to this year. Let's talk about books, all coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. You know, these last couple of years, one thing that I can't say the pandemic did, forcing us to stay inside, we read more books, and book sales were up in 2020 and 2021, some of the best figures in years. Today, we're going to talk about books, nothing but books. So let's have some fun. First, joining us, Mitchell Kaplan, owner of Books and Books. Mitchell, always great to have you on the program.
Oh, Lewis, it's great to be here. Great, great, great to be here.
I don't know. Every time I talk to you, I feel like I need to have a latte. I don't have one right now, but that's okay. I've got you, so I'm good to go. Also joining us, former book editor for the Miami Herald, still a book lover, Connie Ogle. Connie, it's been a while, but it's great to have you back.
Thanks for inviting me, Lewis.
And before we jump in, I just want to ask, what is your favorite book of 2021? What are you looking forward to in 2022? And I love asking this question. How many books do you think you're going to read this year? I got a goal. I'll share that later. Tweet us at WLRN Sundial. Mitchell, when you look back on 2021 for you, what was the most memorable moment? What are you happiest about?
Oh, you know, there were so many, actually. You know, so many of our events went virtual. So the interactions that we had with authors were all happening online. And there were some phenomenal online discussions that we had. There was one that we had with Richard Powers with his new book, Bewilderment, that was so moving because he was living you know, he wrote The Overstory, and his new book is kind of about the effect of, you know, our environment and the effect of, you know, what the world is sort of turning into. And he lives right on the edge of, in North Carolina, of the Appalachians. And he really gave this incredibly passionate talk. I also thought the opening event we had at the Miami Book Fair with Amor Towles, who wrote The Lincoln Highway, was quite spectacular. But I have to say the most remarkable thing for me was, in the middle of this crazy pandemic, in the middle of this upheaval over the last year, to see people coming into the store, masked, of course, and to see a lot of young people. There were so many young people about, more than I can ever remember, who have kind of rediscovered the analog world of books. And that, to me, I think, is one of the most gratifying things.
I know this, that last year I finally, you know, found the courage to get out and come back to the store. And, you know, it was one of those things, like I almost felt like Indiana Jones. I was walking into a temple. It's like, I haven't been here in a long time. And it felt great to be back. It really did. Connie, for you, as an avid reader, what was most memorable? What did you enjoy most about this past year?
What I enjoyed most was just the Miami Book Fair coming back. Having missed it last year was harder on me than I expected. And I saw, you know, some of the writers I really like Lauren Groff and Catherine Raven, who wrote a wonderful book called Fox and I. But the moment that was really great for me was sitting in the Pamela Paul panel. She has a panel every Sunday morning, and she brings in a bunch of different writers. And Dave Barry was there, and Disha Filial, who wrote The Secret Lives of Church Ladies, and several other people. And I just sat there in the audience, and I was just so happy to be around a bunch of book lovers. Yes, I had my mask on. Yes, there weren't, you know, it wasn't quite as packed as it normally was. But just hearing people talk about books and laughing, it was really a great experience.
You know,
I should also say, Lewis, real quick, that, you know, really one of my high points was being able to see Connie at the Miami Book Fair. Always see Connie. And you talked earlier about how book sales were up this last year pretty significantly. And I think that's because, you know, Connie added to her the amount of books that she wanted to read. And I think that had a lot to do. There's nobody who reads better than Connie. And I, and whatever goal you have, you can multiply it by a lot.
I know. Listen, we're going to talk about how many books we all read last year. And yeah, I know. Every time I ask Connie, I end up feeling bad about myself because I'm never going to come close to that. But yeah, you know, Mitchell, I'm wondering, seeing that the book sales were up, one of the things I wonder too is, are people still buying physical books? Or, because I saw ebooks are just a lot more popular than before.
Well, ebooks have actually been declining, believe it or not.
Really? Okay.
And I think maybe during the pandemic they went up a bit. But ebooks have flattened out. I mean, you know, electronically, if you're going to talk about something, I think the thing that has gone up, and maybe even during the pandemic, were audiobooks, believe it or not. Electronically delivered audiobooks were probably more of a thing than ebooks. But yes, people are buying physical books. I was talking to a publisher yesterday. I think it was from, I'm trying to remember where it was from, but one of the major four or five publishers, and they were saying that 2021 was the biggest year they've ever had. Ever, which is really kind of amazing. And mostly in physical books is what they were talking about. So people were coming back to reading. I know I unplugged a lot. I had a lot of time at home. I think I read more than I normally read. And I sort of am a slow reader, but I read a lot. So yeah, people were getting back in touch with things that really mattered, I think. And they wanted their time wisely.
Yeah, I did read more. I also have to admit that I caught up on a lot of Netflix, but you know, that's me. Connie, for you, again, as avid reader as you are, ebooks, is that a thing for you? Audiobooks, or are you the traditionalist?
Well, I guess I'd say I'm traditionalist. I love reading a a hard copy. And like Mitchell said, most of my stimulus checks went to books and books because. But I think there's a really important place for ebooks. They're great for people with vision problems, and they were great during the pandemic for those of us who were still reviewing books, because the advanced reading copies, the publishing houses couldn't get them out to us. So I probably read more ebooks this year than I ever have. And I also am a big library user, and I always get the hardback out of the library, but I got to tell you, it's faster to get the ebooks. So I did probably read more ebooks than I normally do. And I'm a big fan of audiobooks, a huge fan. I used to listen in my commute from Hollywood to Doral. And once we were working from home, I had to find a new way. So I started walking, and I walked a lot.
I'm finding with audiobooks, if it's the author or certain readers, yes, because there are certain people who could do it better than others. I will say this with ebooks. It's convenient, but it's too easy for me to flip over to YouTube or a game on my iPad. So I should just stick to books. Again, talking about books and what we enjoyed in 2021, I'm talking with the Miami Herald's Connie Ogle and Mitchell Kaplan of Books and Books, and we want to hear from you. You know, what were your favorite books of 2021, and what are you excited about for 2022? You can find us on Twitter or Facebook at WLRN Sundial. Mitchell, you are the host of a podcast, Literary Life with Mitchell Kaplan. That's been going on for a while now.
It has. I was looking at it the other day. It's our third anniversary of that. And it's been very cool. I mean, it used to be people who just wandered into the store, but now I can do people over the phone or on Zoom. And I have some very, you know, very interesting interactions. Like, you know, it was kind of a wild ride that I had with Quentin Tarantino, who called in, and he was really very lovely. It was really a nice talk that we had, but it was kind of like, I felt like I was riding a wild horse as I was talking to him. And, you know, so it's been really interesting. So I haven't felt that as isolated as maybe I would have, because I've been able to do these things. The problem is I'd like to do many, many more, but I won't obviously talk to someone unless I've read their book. I had a really, you know, Connie mentioned another book that was a favorite of mine, Catherine Raven's Fox and I. And we've continued a correspondence, but I spoke with her. She was in Montana and I was in Miami. It was in the winter and I was here, and we talked about Fox and I, and she's fascinating. For those of you who don't know, it's a nonfiction book about, she is a biologist at a university, and, you know, who never really believed in the anthropomorphizing of animals, but one day a fox showed up in her backyard and proceeded to show up every single day for a lot of days. And she developed this relationship with it. And Connie loved the fact, and I did too, that she would actually be reading, she'd read books to the fox, right, Connie?
Yes.
That was cool.
She read The Little Prince to the fox.
She read The Little Prince. I mean, it's a very quirky, interesting, you know, really wonderful book. Lewis, happened with this,
Mitchell,
this podcast was a link to the outside world for me.
I want to tell you something. You talked to Tarantino, okay? Can I just tell you, I've been a talk show host now for 20 plus years, and I've never talked to him. You know, I'm already jealous of you. Thanks a lot.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people you talk to that make me very jealous.
Yeah. I have. He is on my list of, dream talks.
I invited him to Miami. He lives in the Israel part of the year. So we may get him down here in Miami for a little bit. So
okay. All right. I'm looking forward to
that. I'll have a coffee with him.
I'm definitely looking forward to that. Connie, I know you're not a big podcaster, but, you know, do you listen to author interviews? Does it matter to want to hear from your favorite authors, or do you like to keep it a mystery?
No, I love hearing author interviews. And one of the things I did for the past year, well, since the start of the pandemic, is I watched a ton of Zoom interviews. Books and Books did them throughout the year. A lot of other bookstores did them. Politics and Prose did them. I watched those. When the book fair was not in person last year, I watched a ton of those. And from everybody from Leonard Pitts talking to James McBride to I binged on them. And I do think it's a really interesting thing. And it's a lot of fun. And it was such a great thing to do when we were so isolated and we couldn't go out. So yeah, I think there's a lot of value.
You know what I was thinking too, which is sort of cool, is that the last 2 years of people doing these, we have created a record, you know, for history that probably doesn't exist at any other period of time of authors. I mean, historians will be able to click back to this period and see who all of these people are and what they were like. You know, it'll be really very interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, because a lot of people are doing, you know, there are a lot of different podcasts out there. And of course, I got to mention, I mean, we have the Sundial Book Club, and we love talking to authors as well. I love talking to authors. It's always a lot of fun. Let's just get to it, because I want to go ahead and feel bad about myself. Connie, go ahead and tell us how many, because I've set a goal, and I'll talk about it in a minute, but I want to read more books. I really do. You read a lot. I try to keep up with you, and it's not going to happen. But how many books did you read in 2021?
Okay. You would think that I would have read a lot more, but I always hover right around the same number. For 2021, I read 121 books. That also includes audiobooks, though. I'm including everything.
Okay.
Connie, wait a minute. Wait. Audiobooks often take longer than regular books.
They do take. They take me longer because I'm not, you know, I can only walk for so long without keeling over, so I can't. But yeah, so 121 books. I think I went back and looked, because I'm one of these OCD people who keeps a list of everything, and it was funny to see when I read the most during the past year. And there would be times where I read a lot when we were on lockdown, and then when we were able to get out and I was able to go on vacation, I didn't read as much because I went hiking and I tried to be outdoors. So then I hurt my knee in July, so I, you know, read a lot more. It was just kind of funny to see it all.
You know, I love the fact that you just said, well, you know, I only read 121 books. I mean, you know, I'm doing math as you're saying that. I'm thinking, how many books a week are you reading to get to that number? I'm doing two books right now. Look, here's my goal, 70. And that's going to be a stretch for me. And you're sitting there saying 121 books, and that's it. That's a lot of books. That is a ton of books, Connie. How many books a week are you reading?
You know, it depends, because sometimes sometimes you need comfort reads, and you read, you know, I like to read crime novels and mystery fiction when I need comfort. I don't know why, but I do. And those are quicker to get through than sitting down with something like, you know, The Prophets by Robert Jones. I mean, that took me a lot longer. So I can't really say week to week. And also, you know, it depends on the weather. I walk more in good weather.
Yeah, no, that's true. Okay, so it's you have a combination of traditional books and ebooks and audio books, and you'll read fiction, you'll read nonfiction. Again, 121. That's, I don't know who reads more than that.
They're out there.
I don't want to meet that person. I really don't. Mitchell, how about you? How many books did you read last
year? I have the Lucy in the Chocolate Factory problem. You know, I'm surrounded by books, and I see the tens of thousands of books that come through the store, and I see it's like being on a conveyor belt every week. There's like 15 books I want to read, and I end up kind of bringing home a bunch of them. And then I'm also inundated with what's called galleys of books that are coming out, you know, like in the next 9 months, 10 months, 12 months. So I have to use a lot of times that sort of like 50 page rule, that if it's a book that I'm reading just for pleasure, if it doesn't grab me immediately, or, you know, I give it some time, I can't continue with it, because there's always like another 10 books beckoning, you know, staring at me.
No, and you know what?
So it's really a rough thing for me, but I am not a fast reader. So if I can read a book and a half, 2 books a week, because I'm also I've got this job that causes me to be in the bookstore for hours and hours at a time.
So, let's see. He does bookstores. He's now into movies. Yeah, I know. You're a busy guy. It's okay. That's all right.
But I have to say that I taste probably as many books as Connie reads.
I like that. I like that. That's pretty good. You know what? You talk about that because sometimes we as well get, and Connie knows this as well, because I remember the piles of books that she had at her desk at the Miami Herald. We get all of these early copies. Is there one or two early copies of Florida Writers we should be looking forward to in 22?
Well, he's a quasi Florida writer.
Okay.
But there's a book that hasn't been getting a lot of attention that's going to be coming out. It's going to be coming out from Russell Banks, believe it or not. It'll be coming out in the fall. And it's the first time that he's going to be coming out with Knopf. He usually was published through Echo, but his publisher, Dan Halpern, moved over to Knopf. And he's taken a hinge of history. And I didn't know anything about this, but there was a Shaker community that, Connie, did you know about that? There was a Shaker community that hovered around Ocala, near Lake Ocala.
When?
And it was for about 15 years, 20 years, from 1890 to about 2010. And it was a Shaker community that moved down from up north. You know, since they didn't really have kids, it was an attempt to kind of infuse a bunch of converts or people that they could, you know, get into the community in order to keep it alive.
And when is that coming out?
It's coming out in the fall.
Okay.
And it has a murder at the center of it.
Oh.
And Russell took this event, a real event that happened, and he brings to life a Florida that I didn't know, the Florida of turn of the century in the middle part of the state. It's really quite telling. I happen to get a very early read on it.
All right. So I'm going to put that on the list. Connie, what are you looking forward to in 22?
The one I'm dying to get my hands on is The Kennedy House by Jennifer Egan. She wrote a book called Visit from the Goon Squad. I don't know how many years ago. And this is something of a sequel. She's fantastic. That's the one I'm really excited about. I'm also pretty excited about Douglas Stewart's Young Mungo. He's the guy that wrote Shuggy Bane last year. It's a heartbreaker. And this is basically Romeo and Juliet with two teenage boys in, you know, not rural, but urban Scotland in the 80s. I mean, I'm in. I can't wait to read that.
Wow.
I should tell you, there's a couple of other Florida writers that are coming out with new, I think, pretty spectacular books. One is Diana Abu-Jabber,
okay,
who's got a new book called Fencing with the King. And it's really pretty remarkable in that it takes you, you know, Diana is of Jordanian American heritage.
Okay.
And it takes you into Jordan as well as being in this country.
And real briefly, what's the other one, just for time?
I'm sorry. The other one is by Alex Segura.
Oh, that's right.
With him.
Yeah.
But he's got one called Secret Identity. And then lastly, Brad Meltzer, the prolific and wonderful Brad Meltzer, has another one of his adult mysteries coming out.
All right. So we've got a lot to look forward to in 2022. We've got big goals that we've set for ourselves. I'm still not going to get anywhere near Connie's goals, but I'm going to read more. That's for sure. And Connie, I know, because I follow you on Twitter, I'm keeping my fingers crossed for you. I hope you do finally read Moby Dick, because you should. Okay.
I don't know if I'm going to get to it. I'm making no promises. I was supposed to read it last year and I couldn't bring myself to do it. And I also, this year, you know, I said that I read 121 books, only 15 of those were nonfiction. So my goal is going to be read a little more nonfiction.
Okay.
So
all right.
We'll see how Moby Dick fits into all that.
Well, I'm going to admit right now, I didn't read it when I was in school. I did the Cliff Notes. Shh, don't tell anybody. Please, I want to pretend that I did. Connie Ogle of the Miami Herald and Mitchell Kaplan of Books and Books, it is such a pleasure. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
Louis.
All right, you guys have a wonderful, wonderful 2022. And that's our program for this Tuesday, January 4th. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we're going to get a glimpse of the upcoming legislative session. We're going to talk with the state Democratic representative from South Florida, Dan Daly, plus a sociologist behind a popular TED Talk about education, recently joined Florida International University, and he joins our program. And, well, 2021 wasn't much better than 2020, but we still found moments from our reporting in the WLRN newsroom that brought us joy, and we're going to share some of those joyous moments with you. Remember, you can always catch the program rebroadcast at 8 o'clock or find us on iTunes, your podcast app, any one of them. Just look up WLRN Sundial. If you do, subscribe and let us know what you think of the program. And remember that you can always keep in touch with us on Twitter or Facebook at WLRN Sundown. Now, we're talking about books. Don't forget that we are reading for our January Book Club title, Les Standiford's book, Last Train to Paradise. Go to our Facebook page, Sundial Book Club. Join and tell us what you think of the book. We're going to be talking with him soon. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safe. Take care of each other. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute.
WLRN Public Media.